Welcome to the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and my special guest this week is Vinny Eastwood. Vinny and I are going to be talking about, firstly for our Kiwi listeners, we're going to be talking about the South Canterbury Finance trial, which wrapped up today, and we're going to talk about what that means for New Zealand. Because I'm well known in New Zealand on this subject, certainly amongst people that have taken an interest in it, I've written a statement, I've made a statement about it that I want to read out just to sort of encapsulate my views on the outcome of the trial today. And then I want to move on from that rather quickly in the show and to talk with Vinny in detail about what this trial means for New Zealand and what the outcome of it means for New Zealand and what the process that was used to get to this point has meant. And particularly what I want to talk about is what I believe that has cost us as a society and what we are in danger of as a result of it, and what we need to be vigilant about because of it. So without any further ado, I'll go straight into just reading my statement for those of you who are waiting for me to say something about this. Just to be clear, my interest in the South Canterbury Finance issue from day one has always been about the injustice and human rights angle in relation to Alan Hubbard. Those who know me personally know that my bottom line was always that his age and health condition was enough evidence on its own to prove that they simply should have found another way if they wanted their hands on it all that much. The saddest thing I ever heard Alan Hubbard say was, if John Key wanted it that much, he should have come and asked me. I would have been happy to retire, but I couldn't find anyone I trusted enough to take over from me, and I'm worried what will happen to the investors if I take my eyes off it. All of this was completely unnecessary. The reason why John Whitehead from Treasury did not appear in court today is precisely appear in court as a witness is precisely the same reason why they couldn't afford for Alan Hubbard to appear in court either, because it would have enabled the defence lawyers to table as part of the evidence against the Crown the fact that an email was sent by the Governor of the Reserve Bank to Bill English the day after National took office in 2008, warning Bill English not to renew the Crown guarantee for South Canterbury Finance. The email clearly stated that it was not too big to fail vis-a-vis the New Zealand economy. Bill English completely ignored it. Instead, while Alan Hubbard was in hospital battling cancer, resulting in the loss of his kidneys, requiring him to adjust to life with dialysis treatment, a process lasting almost 2 years, the government installed its own directors on the South Canterbury Finance Board. Alan Hubbard was completely honest in the 60 Minutes interview he did about that period between 2008 and 2010. He said that the influx of money into South Canterbury Finance during that time was phenomenal and the company grew much larger rapidly. He also made it clear he was uncomfortable with that process. And then they accused him of fraud, out of the blue, after a guy John Key employed in 1990, someone he has known since school, was shoulder-tapped by John Key to work for the Securities Commission. Meanwhile, Treasury was putting pressure on Alan Hubbard to tip his best assets into South Canterbury Finance as an act of good faith. Doing so made Alan the only finance company owner in the world to have done so in response to the global financial collapse. The day after that transaction was completed, John Key's mate at the Securities Commission received an anonymous complaint, and I use the word anonymous in inverted commas, which ultimately resulted in the fraud allegations against Alan as well as statutory management a couple of weeks later. Of course, John Key's mate forgot to tell everyone that his brother had also been bankrupted by South Canterbury Finance the year before for almost $8 million worth of debt on a string of failed bars and restaurants. And the rest, as they say, is history. One of the companies Alan tipped into South Canterbury Finance was purchased by John Key's next-door neighbour for $44 million. He sold it 6 weeks ago for $149 million. So I know who really committed the fraud. And it sure as hell wasn't Alan Hubbard. Remember, this all started with them accusing him of running a Ponzi scheme. 2 weeks ago, his investors were told they are getting 99.37% of their money back after 4 years after his death. So you can hardly call that a Ponzi scheme then. And the best part is that even though our taxpayer money was used by John Key and Bill English to pay out the banks for any shortfalls on the sale of South Canterbury Finance's assets, we're not allowed to know anything about those valuations on those assets because the sale of those assets are commercially sensitive. How can they be commercially sensitive when taxpayer money has been used? New Zealanders, you've been had. The only fraud I can see that has been committed here has not been committed by Alan Hubbard. The real fraud has been perpetrated by his accusers. Alan Hubbard was never even interviewed by the SFO. All of the evidence portrayed in the media about him was provided by insolvency practitioners appointed by the Crown, who were paid large sums of money to produce that, in inverted commas, evidence. The former director of the SFO, Adam Feely, gave away copies of Alan Hubbard's biography away as booby prizes at an SFO Christmas party, while Alan was still under investigation by the aforementioned insolvency practitioners who were being paid by the SFO to produce the so-called evidence the SFO used to charge Alan Hubbard with. The media were notified that Alan Hubbard was being charged before Alan Hubbard was. Because everyone made it about money, my message about injustice and improper process was buried and fell upon deaf ears anyway. But it was always the process which stood to undermine John Key as soon as it is investigated. I just did the math a lot earlier than most other people. That's my statement on the subject. Now, you know, we've covered this topic through and through, Vinny, over the last 4 years, well, the best part of 4 years now. Oh, we've gone in, you know, we've gone into every aspect. I was really frustrated today watching your Facebook post, watching people commenting on that with just absolute, complete and utter ignorance. And I tell you what, this is where I want to go with this radio show. This is what I want to say to those people. You people pride yourself, right, on being aware. You pride yourself on constantly posting on Facebook and in other forums how bad the media is and how corrupt journalists are these days and all this kind of stuff. And yet, here's a perfect example where you have fallen hook, line, and sinker for a bunch of headlines, and the biggest trap that you've fallen into is that you have confused accusations with proof. An accusation is not proof of anything other than an accusation has been made. And yet it seems today that all they need to do is put something in a newspaper and half of you will believe it. You don't even need the evidence. You don't need court cases. You don't need trials. Even you people out there who think that you're hardcore activists, most of you won't actually believe something unless you read it in a headline. You're actually waiting for official confirmation to prove that the conspiracy theories that you get angry about other people accusing you of having are actually true.
You know, this reminds me of a joke, Paul. What do you call it when a slimy reptile that rolls in the mud accuses you of something that's not true? An allegation.
It's like the one, what's the difference between a lawyer and a catfish? One's a scum-sucking bottom feeder and the other one's a fish. You know, the thing is, the reason why I stood up and defended Alan Hubbard is because the justice system was completely missing in action in that equation. And I'm frustrated, Vinny, that so many of your followers I saw going onto your Facebook page today and just rabbiting off about Alan Hubbard and they've assumed his guilt without spending more than 4.8 seconds doing any research. And I've worked on this for 4 years, and the reason why I got into it, and you've known this since day one, mate, had nothing to do with money. It was the fact that what those guys did on your Facebook page today was the exact reason why I got into this.
See, I don't even know the context of what you're talking about. Which Facebook post, bro?
Oh, when you put up that mate, you ruined my show. Don't do that. You edit this bit out.
My bad. Hey, see, it's my bad on the research part, not yours.
You put a post on about the South Canterbury Finance Trial, and you tagged me in it, so I had no choice but to read all the notifications, and all these ignorant idiots came on there and started going, oh, yeah, you know, Alan Hubbard, oh, yeah, he should have gone down as well, you know, pity he died. I was like, oh, God, you people are unbelievable. You will sit there half your day wanking on about how corrupt the media is, and yet you've fallen for this one hook, line, and sinker. I mean, what did you guys just do? You basically made a series of judgments without doing any research based on a bunch of headlines. Why? Because it pushed your buttons around money. Because it was about money, you immediately suspended the need to allow Alan Hubbard or anyone else to have any rights in the equation. And this is my basic point I have said since day bloody one, right? We cannot have a situation in society where rich or poor, doesn't matter which end of the spectrum you are. The moment you start throwing people's rights out the window, where to the degree where you don't even need a proper bloody trial or even a proper investigation anymore, all you need is what happened in this case, which is a politician to point the finger, and half the country believes that his accusation that man's guilty of fraud, right? Half the country believes it's true. And I've had people say to me, oh, we don't need any evidence. We've got the proof. John Key said so. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. And the thing is that there are people on your Facebook page, mate, who fell for the same shit.
Hey, well, you know what, I look at it like this, bro. There's probably, well, everybody can do something, but nobody can do everything, right? And this is something that activists have told me a bit. It's because some people are very, very specialized in their particular fields, like your case with South Canterbury Finance and Alan Hubbard, whereas other people, particularly listeners, they don't have quite as large of a knowledge base about particular instances. So when you're dealing with mass ignorance, even of those who claim to be aware, you have to be concerned, Paul, about the emotional kind of reaction that you yourself might have because of this, because it seems more like a betrayal or something like that. But I think we have to lower our expectations of people. And somebody once told me that the key to happiness in life is totally is low expectations.
No. That is not how we're going to get out of the crap. What we need to do is raise our expectations of everybody. That's what we need to do, mate.
I don't know about you, but
the whole reason why we're in the crap is because we've lowered our expectations of every... I mean, hello? Did you just look at what we just bloody voted in? I mean, what did half the country do? Vinny, they got presented with overwhelming evidence that we're being run by complete and utter just God knows
criminals.
What. Mate, it's just hard to find the words. And half the country went, oh, that's okay, we don't mind.
Hey, I also went like that, though, because...
Basically, the country went, they're the best of a bad bunch. I mean, that's what most people actually said. So how is that? How can we lower our expectations anymore, mate?
By increasing our expectations in ourselves and not expecting other people to fulfill our expectations of them. That's how, Paul.
Bingo. You just hit the nail on the head. In other words, don't keep putting other people on pedestals and giving them all of your power and hoping that they're going to answer all of your problems and solve everything for you, because it ain't going to happen. That game has been played all the way throughout history. It's called politics and stardom and celebrity and all the rest of it. And there's a downside to it. The poor bugger that gets put up on the pedestal can't actually live up to all the expectations. So it's only a matter of time after they get put up there, they're going to get shredded. I mean, If you're a movie star, it's only a matter of luck if you get most of the way through your bloody lifetime without getting shredded for something. Ask Robert Downey Jr. You know, that's if you live. And the same thing with politicians. I mean, they've got the lifespan of a mosquito, really, don't they? After they go up on the pedestal, it's only a matter of time.
It depends how corrupt they are, because if you look at some of our previous prime ministers who have really, really screwed the country and the country winds up hating them because of it, they wind up getting huge appointments, like as a high commissioner in like Monaco, for example, or chief of the UN, etc., that Helen Clark is going to go through. And what this is, it's kind of like a reputation shell game. Just when you come in and you've just done enough to make everybody effed off with you and no longer want to listen to you, that's when you change venues to a whole bunch of other mindless morons who just don't know what's up yet.
Mate, you know, I appreciate, I acknowledge you for standing up for people and saying, you know, going back to what you said before about how we shouldn't expect so much from people and all the rest of it. Mate, yeah, by all means, set the standard for yourself and be a better person than you were yesterday, and that's my definition of success. And I think you see life the same way. That's why we click, right? At the end of the day, people have got to start taking more responsibility. That's all I'm trying to say. You know, don't sit there. What I'm saying to you, mate, is this is what I have, the message I have to your the people that I saw posting on that subject today. Don't sit there half your day criticizing the media and all the rest of it. If you're going to buy in to you, people need to become more careful. The way out of this mess is people need to start being more careful about where they're personally being selective, where they're applying selective morality, for instance, to situations where they're going, oh, it's human nature that people will look for information to support their biases, right? I understand that. But what I'm saying is, if we're going to find a way out of this increasing mess that we're finding ourselves getting into, or that we are in society, the only way out of it is increased personal responsibility. And part of that...
you have to lead by example.
Yeah, you do, but, you know, the point is that people have got to want to go there, mate, and at this point in time, it doesn't appear to me like they do.
I don't think they'll ever want to go there. It's kind of like doing the dishes. You're never going to feel like it. You just have to do it.
Well, mate, you know, I had an interesting conversation with a guy that the guy Horda Torfason. A lot of you people will recognize his name. Even
the guy led the Iceland Revolution, kicked out the bankers. Revolution.
Yeah, he would. If there was ever a case of a reluctant kind of hero, reluctant leader, it was him. He actually didn't want that role. What he wanted to do was empower other people to stand up for themselves, and he actually achieved that. Because the structurally speaking, the Iceland Revolution occurred by way of the fact that he literally galvanized the population to get off their backsides and go literally and stand in front of the parliament buildings with pots and pans and bang them with ladles. And there was something, thousands and thousands of people did this, and they did it for about 3 weeks, three or four weeks. And basically they drove the parliamentarians mad. And so the parliamentarians eventually all resigned. And that allowed the people to take control of their government and reappoint the people they wanted and run fresh elections and start. And they actually had participating hand in developing their new constitution. It was a great thing. Now, this guy, when I talked to him, Horda Torfason, he's a gay guy. And he's an actor and a producer and a director. He's been in theatre for many, many years. And all he is he was just a lightning rod. He just basically found himself at a certain place in a certain time at a certain point in history, and he spoke confidently about a subject, and people just elevated him. They elevated him to this position where it was just fortunate that he was capable of handling it well, and he stayed and he did the most important thing I think he could have done under the circumstances. He identified what his core message was, and he stuck with it. And his core message was, it's up to you. It's up to you. It's up to you. There is no one else. You can't keep pushing people up onto pedestals and expecting them to solve your problems for you. You have to take responsibility.
I got that way with Alex Jones when I was first starting off in this career of mine. And once I found out some background stories about him from the people who used to produce him, used to sit in for his radio show and everything, I actually felt an emotional loss because I realized that this guy who I'd put in such high esteem didn't meet my expectations and in fact kind of like almost actively betrayed them. And I came up with the realization that with you putting somebody up on a pedestal, doesn't matter who it is, when you realize that they don't measure up, you get crushed when they tumble off that pedestal because you're the stupid idiot who put them up there in the first frickin' place, aren't you? And in so doing, it means that you can't even put yourself up on a pedestal because you won't fulfill even your own expectations or your own self-aggrandizement purposes. And it's kind of like what you do is what you do, and that's actually all there is. It doesn't matter what you talk about. It doesn't matter what you intend to do. You have to act. If you don't... then there is no telling how far you will fall.
People have got to stop assuming one thing, or two things, that other people are either more or less fucked up than you are. That's the bottom line, is the majority of people I know assume that other people are less fucked up than they are. Right?
And big mistake.
That is a myth. That is a social myth that is still widely held by a lot of other people. A lot of people believe that someone else has a better life than they do.
Grass is always greener on the other side, as they say.
There's a generalized belief that some lives escape pain. Bollocks. It's not true. You know, the bottom line is just concentrate on your own life because you actually really don't know what goes on in another person's life. Even if you do see them driving an Aston Martin, you have no idea what's going on in their head or their heart.
Yeah. Like if somebody tells you you're tired, do you feel how tired they are?
Yeah.
No, you don't, do you?
Alan Hubbard became a victim of this generalized hatred of wealth in general in New Zealand. It's a really interesting phenomenon. It's very much in the English culture.
Whoa, can I say something here? The Prime Minister who gets like $50 million a year from Merrill Lynch or whatever, who lives in a $5 million mansion, he calls the house that Merrill built, led the campaign against the rich people.
Let me tell you something, mate. Getting back to the issue of personal responsibility, because I can tie this in here. The reason why this country is so divided is very simple. It's divided literally in two, by two schools of thought. Into two schools of thought. And neither of the two schools of thought that I'm about to describe, neither of them take any personal responsibility. And they are that half of the country is people, or appears to be people, that think that wealth is the only measure of success. So wealth is good and not wealth is bad. So in other words, poor people are responsible for their situation. They are there because of poor choices. They are not good people because they're not wealthy people, basically, or they're just not as good as wealthy people. That's a generalized feeling and a belief that's sort of held by a lot of people. And the other group of people the other division is the group of people that just can't stand the idea that somebody's rich, period. They don't care what the circumstances are. They don't care whether it was inherited, worked hard for, or just basically stolen. Swindled, as in John Key's case. They don't care how the money came about. All they know is they just hate the idea that someone has so much of it and they don't. Well, neither of those two schools of thought has any bearing in actual. They are just, that's just profoundly stupid thinking. Okay? Because nobody wins by either school of thought. Money is just energy. It's a manifestation of, if we didn't have money, we would simply be exchanging something else, because human beings need to give to get. You're listening to the Independent Kiwi Show with your host, Paul Carruthers, and my guest, Vinny Eastwood, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers, and my guest with me this evening is Vinny Eastwood. Welcome, Vinny.
Lovely to be here, bro, again. Now, can we actually say something about the, like what we were getting into last segment is this concept of wealth, because there's a great word that a comedian used once. I think his name's Wyeth Chalmers. It's called wankery. And and by George, there are an awfully large amount more rich wankers than there are poor wankers, you know?
I don't agree. I do not agree with that statement. Absolutely disagree. I've met some really obnoxious wealthy people who have just a hideous sense of entitlement. And I've met some really obnoxious poor people who have, guess what, a hideous sense of entitlement.
So it's kind of like fitty-fitty.
Pretty much. That, you know, the point
so basically,
is,
it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, you're still a wanker.
Well, history proves beyond... Exactly. No, I won't say that. History proves beyond... don't be such a cynic. History proves...
Sorry, journalism speaking.
History proves beyond any doubt that... you bloody interrupted my train of thought now. You've ruined my show.
My bad.
History proves beyond any doubt that attitude is not determined by financial circumstances. There is no shortage of examples in history of people who other people admire for their stand or whatever it is, that they something they did in a situation that demonstrated that they were not, that their definition of themselves and their value and worth on this planet were not defined by their financial circumstances.
That said, there was a study done by Berkeley University in the United States upon wealth, and one of their experiments that they did was having somebody crossing a street crosswalk, like the car's supposed to stop, and they found that less expensive cars were far more likely to stop, and the far more expensive, let's say European cars and things like this on this Berkeley, California crosswalk would stop only a fraction of the amount of time. And what they've also determined, they did this thing with a rigged Monopoly game, where one of the people playing the Monopoly game will in fact be given an unfair advantage. Like, for example, instead of going past Go and collecting $200, they go past Go and collect $400, sorry. And they also get a disproportionate amount of the cards of the properties that come out. And they were actually interviewing and researching actual researchers and psychologists who were playing these games. And even the psychologists who were playing this noticed a change of their personality, where they would actually start to snap at people and try to feel like there's that sense of entitlement, as if there is indeed a link between wealth that's accumulated and the subjugation of others. Now, I don't think this is actually a isolated incident. I think this goes all the way back. Who have been the people that have overwhelmingly oppressed large quantities of people? Has it been people who are broke as frack who can't be bothered, or has it been the incredibly elite wealth intergenerational families who have had that wealth forever and have never actually really had to earn a dollar in their life?
Yeah, but let's be clear about this, okay? We give them the power that they have. Without us, they have no power. End of story, okay? So we don't have to buy the products. We don't have to buy the paradigm. We don't. We do not have to do that. We do this by choice. So let's be honest with ourselves. The path to change, the path to a better future for everybody, lies in taking personal responsibility. We can sit here and go on about the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the John Keys of this world and all the people that we perceive to be pillaging and accumulating and stockpiling all of the wealth at the top end of society for themselves, right, and leaving more and more of us to sort of struggle. We can do that till we're blue in the face, but what is kind of alarming me about modern day society is that we've got half the world on Facebook going, oh God, look at all this is happening. Everything I've just described is happening. Oh God, you know, what are we going to do? We need to follow. And I'm watching people constantly pushing people forward and going, you do it, you stand up, you do this for us. And oh, you know, David Cunliffe, oh, you can do it. Oh no, it won't be him. Okay, well, somebody else. And we do this shit constantly, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. I mean, how many of you are going to go and buy a bike? How many of you are going to start walking places? How many are going to change the way you spend money? How many of you are actually going to start taking responsibility? How many of you are going to stop hoping and wishing that someone's going to come along and make it all right for you? How many of you are going to step up and play your part in solving the problem instead of just either complaining about it constantly or just, again, throwing all of your efforts and energies into that never-ending search. Have you noticed that never-ending search to find the perfect person who's going to solve all our problems? Is it Winston? No. Was it Helen? No. Is John going to do it? Pretty unlikely. And it just goes on and on and
now,
on.
Isn't it an inherent irony that in order to basically stop individuals from individually screwing over everybody, everybody has to take individual responsibility in order to stop them from getting screwed, right? It's kind of like collectivism plus individualism equals freedom. But at the same time, if people aren't actually willing to sacrifice, and this is, I'm talking about self-sacrifice here. Like I just got finished writing my, my first article for Uncensored Magazine. And, when I first, quit, I was developing employer phobia. You know, I just couldn't get a job. I was unemployable. And so instead of doing, nothing with my life, I took my $4,000 after tax. I took my $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers, got a computer, got a camera, started going out there and interviewing the activists and all the people because I'd been, as I mentioned, like putting Alex Jones up on a pedestal for giving all the activist coverage in the States and what have you. And I simply realized that there was nobody taking responsibility for doing that for New Zealanders. And so I did, even though I had to live in abject poverty for so many years. And I'm only just now kind of like coming right. But since 2012, basically, the people have collectively come together to support my efforts with their donations and their regular subscriptions. In so doing, I'm capable of continuing to help people who won't even ask for help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the lengths I've had to go to stay in my integrity and tell the truth.
The difference between people like us and politicians. When politicians talk about sacrifices having to be made, what they mean is they're going to get a pay increase and everybody else has to sacrifice for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, what I'm saying to you is overall, people need to take responsibility for the fact that they are valuing money more highly than life in many respects. Now, I know a lot of people that their pursuit of money is actually drives them. They're quite prepared to make the conscious choice to become physically unhealthy in order to have money. So that tells me straight away that they've given money a higher value than their, not only their quality of life, but their actual life. Okay? So
what that reminds me of is the
yes. To themselves, if they're willing to do that to themselves, then they're willing to either do that to other people or sit by and do nothing while other people have that done to them, right? And this is where we have gone sadly wrong as a society. I'm not saying money's a bad thing. That's my whole theme throughout this show. If anybody, you know, I'm not, that's my whole point. Is I don't care if people are rich or poor. The only thing I give a toss about, Vinny, is their attitude, mate.
Nobody ever said money was evil. They always said that the love of money was evil. And I consider the current monetary society as a new religion, and that money is your God, kind of like that scene from They Live. And indeed, there have been a lot of parallels to this where people will kill others, they will sabotage others, they will destroy entire nations in the name of their religion. And now our religion has changed to a piece of paper that we worship.
Well, yeah, our religion is money and it's God and we kiss it. You know what I mean? We just
incidentally, you know what the most wealthy entity in the world is, basically? The Vatican. You know?
Yeah, well.
Oh, somebody tell me how this works.
Well, it's people are willing to debase themselves to unbelievable degrees in order to have the stuff. That's the bottom line, is that people have given money a higher value than human dignity. Okay? And that has to change if you hope to have a civil society. It's really simple, people. If you give money a higher value than human dignity, and the majority of you do, all you have to do is pick up a newspaper to see it, the evidence is overwhelming, then we will never, ever, ever be able to live in a civil society. A truly function, a proper, healthy, functioning civil society cannot have it, because those two goals are completely mutually exclusive. They are not compatible. You cannot give money a higher value than human life or the quality of the natural environment. If you give money a higher value than those two things, human dignity, human life, and the natural, or three things, and the natural environment, you value money more highly than that, you cannot live in a civil society. So you must make a decision. This is what's coming in the world. Make a decision, people. Either you are willing to live in a brutal, in the increasingly brutal environment that we're living in, as long as you have, and that's the sad part about it, is the paradigm you've sold is you can't have money and nice people being nice to each other at the same time. What a load of crap. That effectively is why Alan Hubbard got sunk. Because he was basically such a nice guy, these guys have gone out of their way to absolutely vilify him. They don't want you trusting people. They don't want people trusting each other anymore. They don't want handshake. They don't want things done on a handshake. They want everything in triplicate and no trust whatsoever and shitloads of lawyers involved and lots of bitterness and acrimony and resentment and division. That's what they want, because that's what makes money.
Well, they want to violate the trust, and my sister said has been having a little bit of a problem with her employers lately, who dipped her out of some money, and she said, trust is like a piece of paper that you slide across the desk to somebody, and when that person violates that trust, it's like they crumpled up that piece of paper and then hand it back to you. Now, even if they apologize and try to make recompense and try to flatten out that piece of paper again, it'll never be the same piece of paper. It'll still have all those imperfections in it, and it'll never be the same again. Yeah. And a friend of mine, I was kind of actually feeling a bit depressed last night, Paul, and I went around to a friend's place just to say hello to them. And I was talking about how I've been getting dumped on a lot emotionally by people recently, and he said something that's like kept him going throughout the years, and it says you have to implicitly trust everybody, but not the devil inside them. Everybody can be untrustworthy at a particular point in their life. Everybody has these little ticks and things that kind of like throw them off kilter and what have you. Don't trust that part of them.
Yeah, it's almost like the reverse way, Vinny, of saying that your best friend is the person who allows you to express the full range of your personality and still accepts you anyway. You know, it's like there is a wolf and a sheep inside every person. Now, the people who achieve mastery are the people who actually combine the two. They actually sit, they're neither, in fact. The people who achieve mastery are the ones who evolve beyond the wolf and the sheep, and the wolf and the sheep are simply two aspects of their whole persona.
Well, the Native Americans believe that there is not a sheep and a wolf that live inside of us, that there are two wolves. One is malice and cruelty and fear, and the other is beauty and hope and love. And however strong each wolf get depends entirely upon how often you feed them.
That is right. And nobility, I would use as a word too. It's something I'd like to see come back in society more. I'd like to see more of it in society.
I'd say honor. That's
same thing.
Indeed, what we're missing in our modern society is the aspect of honourable conduct among men and women, and this has been kind of subverted over a long period of time by taking away people's responsibilities. Like, let's take for example the Great Depression. This is back during a time when most people knew how to grow their own food, knew how to mend their shoes, mend their clothes, and grow, you know, that kind of thing. They're fairly independent. And then when the economy collapsed, 10 million people starved to death in the US, even though 90% of people lived in rural areas and grew their own food. Today, nobody has those skills. Nobody lives with their extended family. Well, not nobody, but bugger all people anyway. And 90% of people live in cities and they don't grow their own food. What's going to happen then when an economic depression is triggered? We're talking about mass starvation, mass death, and that's basically what's on the card. The environment ain't going to kill you first.
This is the reason for this show, Vinny. We've just answered your question, basically. We've just been answering your question. So it's a good way of tying all that in. Because what is going to happen if and when things go tits up? Well, guess what? If you've been too busy putting money above, your own health, and if your need and pursuit of money for money has desensitized you towards your own needs and the needs of the people and the natural environment around you, you're going to find yourself high and dry if your supply of money dries up for you and all the people around you. Because who do you know? Who can you trust? Who will share with you? Where can you go? What happens if you get tipped out of your house? Who's going to look after you? Who's going to take you in? Who's going to give you warmth and shelter and food and clothing and hopefully some decent company? If you can't answer those questions, you're in trouble.
Who's going to drive you home?
I wouldn't mind betting that a lot of people actually, when they sit down and think of it, they think they know people who will look after them. But trust me when I tell you, you don't know who will look after you until push really comes to shove. And you might be surprised, you know. So what I'm saying to you is, time to dig deeper, people. It really is. If you want to have a better society, you've actually got to care more. And that means specifically being more conscious. That's not saying throw all your money away and go and live in an ashram on the top of a mountain and stare at your navel, right, and live on air. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is have money by all means and continue to make money by all means and enjoy the process and enjoy having money and enjoy the freedom it gives you as well. But just guard against either hurting other people over money or standing by and doing nothing while you see other people being hurt over money. That's the biggie in the world today, is don't stand by. Don't allow the need for money, your need to maintain your own income, to desensitize you towards clear and obvious suffering of other people that's clearly not their fault just because they don't have access to money like you. Right? So if you're going to be willfully blind to injustice, and keep pretending that it's not your problem, and because it's not happening to you, you kind of just don't need to know, right? Then what I'm saying is you can't have it both ways. You cannot have a compassionate civil society unless people start taking responsibility for the fact that this is what we are doing to each other. We are ignoring it. We're ignoring the glaring schisms in our own psyche, in our own collective.
I was just thinking about this, because people are actually trying to break down society into ideologies, you know, left-wing, right-wing, authoritarian, etc. And it doesn't seem to me like there's any actual political ideology that's based around giving a fuck around about other people.
No.
You know? Well, what's that called? Is that called egalitarian or what, you know?
Well, political ideology, it's a case of all roads lead to Rome now. It's corporations. That's it. All political ideology is geared towards the well-being and the growth of corporations. End of story. Right? And corporations are now regarded by the law as people. They've actually got more rights than we do. You know? In fact, I'll rephrase that. Corporations are regarded by the law as more important than people. And you see evidence of that every day. If I'm wrong, why are banks allowed to call the police in to help them evict people from their houses and mortgagee sales? I mean, that's why are New Zealand taxpayer funded police helping private banks evict people from their houses? Why aren't the banks out of their own pockets paying private security guards to go and do it? I mean, if there's a problem and the people don't go peacefully, then Then they call the police, but why are the police turning up to help the bank steward in the first place? You know, there's all these little crossovers points in society. Penny Bright's a classic example.
Now, I just interviewed her before the show, actually.
Well, she's a classic example of, you know, you people out there who think that they can own a freehold property in New Zealand. Well, guess what? You can't. And she's the living proof. If you've paid your mortgage off and you don't owe anyone any money on your house, try not paying your rates and see how long they let you live there. So you've actually gone and paid the bank manager three times the stated value, the original value of that property over the period of the loan that you paid off the mortgage. You effectively paid three times the original agreed price on that property just to say that you have the right to live there. But guess what? You don't actually have the right to live there. It can be taken away from you at the stroke of a pen, even though you've paid three times.
Yeah, a mate of mine who's trying to live, you know, off-grid and set up some new stuff and whatever, and he's like, Vinny, how do you reckon I could, like, stop the council from coming on my property and taxing me or whatever? And I go, 50-caliber machine gun nest? Because basically, unless you're able to overpower them with force, they will frack you up. And it's just that simple. That's when you know. That is when you know that you're living in a totalitarian society where you can't actually defend your rights as a human being without the use of force being used against you.
Well, yeah, that's right. And the only thing is I don't advocate force at all, and I don't like guns. I don't like violence of any kind. My attitude is, hey, if my standing up and speaking the truth, right, rips their nightie that much that they want to come and shoot me, they just do it. Right, because I can't be bothered. I don't want to be here anyway if it's that bloody hard.
Well, there's another element. Do you know how many societies that have totally banned guns for private citizens that haven't ended up in a genocide or a tyranny?
Yeah, I understand this argument, and you take all the guns away from the people, and then you end up with a Stalin or a Mao, Chairman Mao, or Hitler.
End up with them. You start with them, and then they ban everybody's guns, totally subjugate and enslave.
Yeah, I watch a lot of people do this on Facebook. You know, oh, it needs to be a violent revolution and all this kind of crap.
I don't want a violent revolution because they only lead to violent dictatorships afterwards, you know.
That's like, right.
And there's the thing. It's about the old American Revolution way was not actually about a revolution attacking per se. It was a revolution of defense. The very idea that your rights are inalienable, and if people try to take them from you, you are within your human rights to defend yourself. And that was essentially what that revolution was fought over. It wasn't fought for conquest. Unfortunately, what happens after every successful revolution is scumbags see, oh, there's a new power structure here that I can come in, control, manipulate, twist for my own ends.
Yep, but, you know, at the end of the day, my attitude is I'm prepared to fight in as far as I will stand up all day long and say my piece if I think something is wrong or unfair or unjust or whatever. But if it comes down to having to pick up a gun and shoot someone else to make my point or to win the argument, mate, they can just kill me. I really can't be bothered, because if it's got down to the point where that is the argument, right, I don't need to win it that much. I don't need to win it that much that I need to pick up a gun and force someone to either submit to my point of view.
So if New Zealand was invaded, you wouldn't defend it by force?
No, because I'm not. I don't believe in... if somebody attacked me like that, or they attacked our country, yes, I would defend it. But I would. What I'm saying is I just wouldn't go on the aggression.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, because the non-aggression principle. You can't initiate force.
Yeah, I'm not into all of this overtaking the government by violence and all that kind of crap.
Me neither.
That I see some people advocating, and I just...
They're freaking stupid, because guess what happens to when a government realizes that people are going to start using force against them? They preemptively use force against you before you're even prepared to deal with it, you freaking idiots, okay?
Well, not only that, but, you know, what's their motive in doing it? They're just trying to sort of impress people with how big they are. Well, that's fine, but they're just making themselves targets, you know? And it's like, you got to pick your battles reasonably carefully in life.
Wrap up the show.
And, you know, it's just, yeah, peaceful. We can have a peaceful revolution. Every country can have a peaceful revolution. If it really wants it that much, it can have it. Right? There is no need for all this knee-jerky stuff. But people have got to start thinking more about what they're doing and why. You're with the Independent Kiwi Show. I'm your host, Paul Carruthers. It's been great talking with my guest, Vinny Eastwood, tonight. And I look forward to talking with you again soon, Vinny. And thanks to our listeners, both in New Zealand and internationally. And just a reminder to please donate to Vinny Eastwood's...
my homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's some PayPal buttons on there and also a Kiwi Bank for the New Zealand listeners. And bear in mind, of course, if you want Paul's show to continue as well, you've got to start donating to him too. I kind of figured, ladies and gentlemen, that I can either gain 100,000 listeners for myself or I can help 10 people gain 10,000 listeners for themselves and be independent and replace me. You know, it's kind of like the independent dude in New Zealand doing the media and stuff, you know. For frick's sake, it's too much for one guy. You've got to help other people to do the job that you can't do by yourself.
Thanks, Vinny.